Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, our guest is all the way on from Australia. Her name is Tracy Edwards, and Tracy is an RN, and she specializes in cardiac care. So Tracy, thank you so much for being on here today, and I may not have done the best bio, so feel free, please, to add to it, to talk about your credentials and what you do. Yeah, so tell us more about what you do. Okay, go ahead.
It's a pleasure to join you on your podcast. I'm really passionate about cardiac care, so this is a good thing to get the word out.
Yeah, well, how did you get so passionate about it?
I started my nursing career in 1986. So I was laying in bed last night working out how many years I'd been a nurse, and then I thought, oh, geez, that makes me feel old. But I've been a nurse for 38 years now, and wow. I started my nursing career in coronary care or cardiac care. So I looked after patients that had heart attacks, rhythm disturbances like atrial fibrillation or ventricle problems. So that's where I started. And then I eventually moved into the emergency department and became a nurse practitioner. But I still, I'm starting my business up again so that I can educate patients, not so much nurses. And I'm looking at how can we prevent cardiac events and how can we reduce people's risk. And this sort of hit home in August last year when I came home from my 10-hour shift and found my husband in the chair, grey, sweaty, his heart rate was 180, and I thought, my God, I think I'm going to lose him. So I called the ambulance and he was taken to the other sister hospital from where I work because they have cardiac consultants. And it turned out he had atrial fibrillation, a rhythm disturbance. And he'd been in that rhythm for a couple of days, which I didn't realise. And he didn't tell me he was feeling not well. So I thought, you know, I have to get the word out there more because we've had to do a big 180-degree switch around of how we eat, how I cook, how I look after him to reduce his risk of it happening again. He's now in normal rhythm. But if I don't reduce his weight, reduce his alcohol, watch his diet, it can happen again at any time. So I thought I need to get this word out more than I have. So when I see my patients in emergency, I take that chance to sort of slide the cardiac, you know, you've got some risk factors here, maybe we need to address these. So that's sort of my story in a nutshell.
Yeah. And is February in Australia Cardiac Health Month like it is in the US?
No, May is our Cardiac Health Month.
Okay.
So I've got that coming up. So I'll be doing a little bit around that. I'm still trying to get my website up and running because I didn't have a website before because I was educating nurses. So, yeah. So at the moment, I'm on my sister's website so people can get hold of me there, or I'll give you my other email so they can get hold of me there as well if they need to.
Awesome. Yeah, keep us updated because even when the podcast is scheduled, I can always later go in and add your website to the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. No worries.
Yeah. Okay. So what website or email should people use now to reach you?
Okay. There's a couple of emails. They can use my sister's website, and I'm Tracy Edwards, T-R-A-C-Y, no E, at AussieGirlGo.com. And when they get to there, that my page will come up and there's a contact me little form they can submit, or they can email me at edwardstracy with no e 064 at gmail.com. So either way they can get hold of me and I'll answer questions.
Awesome. That's really helpful. Now tell us, do you have you published any kind of book or research literature? Are you a writer by any means? I know you get this awesome kit.
Yep, I did. I have written a book on triage called The Art of Triage, which is how when patients come to an emergency department, they're put into different categories. Depending on what you present with, depends on how quickly you get seen. So I wrote that book mainly for medical and nursing staff to show the importance of, you know, how we triage years ago and how we triage now, and the importance of getting it right. Because when people come in with chest pain, especially women, because they don't always get chest pain, doesn't mean they're not having a heart attack. So there's questions, you need to question people more. And I've also published a paper in England about a rapid assessment team that we have at our hospital, where if we're full in our department, I will go out, assess people, take bloods, order x-rays or ultrasounds, so that when they go through to the doctor, all the results are there and they can get seen. And we've had good success with that. So I published a paper on that.
Awesome. I would love it if you would send me the links, those two things, so people can see more of your work as well.
Yep, no worries. Yeah.
Thank you. All right. So if someone wants to work on improving their cardiac health, well, first of all, you mentioned women.
Yeah.
How, what's your assessment on how well women take care of themselves, especially women who've are recovering from trauma?
Well, if you're in recovery from trauma, they're always going to put their children first if they've got children, or they may have other stresses in place where, you know, if they're domestic violence, for instance, so they're always putting somebody else first. And even women that aren't going through recovery, it's just a natural thing that, you know, we feel ill, okay, but I've got to get the kids to school and I've got to do this and I've got to do that. I'll worry about that later. But when it comes to cardiac health, there may not be a later. And that's what I'm trying to get through to people. If anybody suffers chest pain, there's no later. It needs to be addressed straight away. And I don't know how in Australia you would just go to an ER. We don't have like emergent care or urgent care or anything like that. It's either your local family physician or the ER. So they would come to the ER and then we would go through all the questions to work out, are they having a heart attack? Is it angina? Are they having a coronary artery spasm, which can happen with stress? Or are they having a rhythm disturbance? So it's really important. But with women, it's usually easy with men. They'll turn up and go, oh, I've got this crushing chest pain. You look at them, they're sweaty, they're grey, and you go, right, sit down, I know exactly what's happening. With women, it's a bit different. And when you're looking at women that are postmenopausal, which I'll explain in a minute, women don't necessarily come in with the crushing chest pain. Some do, but they may turn up and say, oh, look, I've got this feeling of indigestion, and they're rubbing their chest, and I'm feeling really tired, and I felt really tired for, you know, a week. I just don't know what this is. And to me, that rings alarm bells, because women don't always present with the crushing chest pain. They can present with a myriad of symptoms that might suggest they're fatigued, but they're not actually fatigued. They might be having a heart attack. Now, with women, our hormones, estrogen, progesterone, help protect us. But once you hit perimenopause, menopause, we lose that that progesterone, estrogen. So we don't have that protective factor. So your risk factors for having a heart attack are the same as men after menopause. Before then, right, we're sort of protected a little bit. So it's important that women understand that. And if they think they're perimenopausal, or, you know, that their periods are erratic, they may be, and they're 45 plus, they may be perimenopausal, go and see your family physician or your general practitioner. And you need to say, hey, look, things are a bit erratic. Could I get my hormones checked? And then he will do the hormone profile and say, oh, yeah, look, you know, you are perimenopausal. Well, then that's when you need to look at yourself and go, right, what are my other risk factors for heart disease? What can I do and reduce? Because once these hormones go, I've got the same risk factor profile as men. I need to do something now.
Yeah. Okay. And so one of the questions I have is because, you know, as you are aware, chest pain or anything with the chest,
yeah,
is very similar to anxiety and panic attacks. Is there a way to notice the difference right away, to tell the difference, or do you absolutely need to have the testing done in the ER to determine?
we do get in the ER, we do get a certain proportion of women, and I'm talking 30, 35 plus, anybody that presents to an ED with chest pain will get an ECG. Mm-hmm. And that is the, or EKG as you guys may know it, that is the bare minimum. But the symptoms of anxiety, they can be chest pain, shortness of breath, a fast heart rate. It could be your heart, or it could be anxiety.
Right.
And I'm not a person that would say, look, just stay home and see if it settles. Because if it doesn't settle,
right,
then we know, okay, something's wrong. So I want your listeners to feel that they're wasting time by turning up to an ER or an urgent care with these symptoms. Because what they'll do, they may not do blood tests, but they'll do an ECG.
Yeah.
Now, if the ECG or EKG shows something, then they'll go on and do the blood test. If it shows nothing, they may say, oh, look, yeah, it is anxiety. Now let's have a look and see how we can reduce your anxiety.
Yeah.
But if you stay home thinking it's just anxiety, it might be that you are having a heart attack and you're slowly niggling, as we can say. You know, some people start a heart attack 2 or 3 days before they actually turn up.
Mm.
And we want to get people early, because once you've damaged that heart muscle, your ability to pump blood around the body, it's gone. It doesn't come back. So if your listeners are not sure whether it's an anxiety attack or whether it's actual chest pain, they should just turn up anyway. Yeah. No one's going to think you're being stupid, because anxiety is a real thing.
Yeah.
And it does cause symptoms that are very similar to cardiac events. Yeah. So it is important that they don't say, well, I'll take the kids to school and I'll go and do the shopping, and they still go, oh, geez, I've still got that and I still feel a bit jittery. No, you need to go and have an ECG. And that means going to the ER.
Yeah, I tell my anxious clients, you know, people with anxiety can still get medical problems.
They can. And that's what people don't realize. You know, I work with colleagues who I have pulled up and said, don't ever say that again. You know, yeah. Oh, it's just anxiety. Well, have you done an ECG? No. Well, how do you know it's anxiety? Right. Don't brush people off, and don't, your listeners, it may very well be anxiety, but we're not going to say, well, you're stupid coming to the ER with that.
Right.
Because the day that we dismiss someone is the day it's a heart attack.
That's right.
And then we've missed and ruined someone's life. So it's important that they take the symptoms seriously. If it's anxiety, they'll go, hey, look, love, I think you're having an anxiety attack, but that's okay. Let's see what we can do about that. But if it is something happening with the heart, they've got it early and they can do something about it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that. I think it's important for people to hear that, you know, is to take the heart stuff seriously.
Yeah. It is. It is. And you know what? We all suffer anxiety at certain stages of our life. Some people not due to trauma. And they're the same. They won't turn up because they think, oh, I'm just a bit anxious. But sometimes that panic feeling is a mechanism telling you that there's something wrong medically.
Something wrong.
As well. Yeah. So yeah, listen to your body.
Definitely. So now I'm curious about the kit that you made that I, one of the reasons why I wanted you on the podcast, because it was so well done. It was really comprehensive. Like, what was your process in making the kit? Like, what did you decide to put in there? Because I was like, oh my gosh, this is so thorough, you know?
Yeah, well, my sister Sheridan and her husband, Eric, came up with putting in the definitions. And I thought, you know, I'm thinking from a nurse point of view. So mm-hmm. I went down the, you know, these are your risk factors. You need to exercise. You need to eat right. You seriously need to see your doctor if you develop any of these symptoms. And my sister said, look, why don't we put in some definitions? And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, well, you talk ECG or EKG, but people out there don't know what that is. That's and cool. I never thought about it. I thought, oh, yeah, that's a good point, you know, because I know what it is. And the troponin, which is the blood test that they do that tests for a heart attack, I know what it is, but everybody else doesn't. So my sister actually, I sent her a rough draft of what I was doing, and she tarted it up for me and then put in the definitions. And I thought, yeah, that's a good point. Especially if you go and see your doctor and he goes, I want you to see a cardiologist. Oh, yeah, okay. You go to the cardiologist And he says, well, we're going to do an angiogram and you might need a stent. And of course, I go with my husband to his cardiologist and I know what he's talking about. And then my husband looks at me and I go, right, it means this. You know, because doctors are notoriously, will use the big speak, but they don't explain things. So in the ER, when I'm going in maybe with a doctor, if there's no one else around, they want someone in there and they're doing a talk about the cardiac issues and they ramble it all off and I stand there and I think, oh my God, that poor lady's just laying there listening to you wah-wah and understands nothing. So then I spend the next 10 minutes saying, right, this is what this means and this is what this means and this is what they're going to do. Well, why didn't he say that? Well, he did sort of, but. You know, doctors don't realise they need to take it down a few notches. Mm-hmm. And it did take me as a nurse practitioner a few years to get that message as well, because we're just taught medical lingo and patients don't get it. And it's not their fault. You have to explain things. So that's why my sister said, well, let's put that bit in the heart health book. And that way, if patients or people go to their cardiologist or get sent to a cardiologist and he mentions this, they can come home and go, do I really have to have that? Or when I go back, I'm going to have to ask a question about that because I don't quite understand it.
Yeah.
So that's why we put that in. So I wanted something that people could take away and use and then build on. So I've gone through the big risk factors. Some of them we can change, some of them we can't. And I've gone through, you know, you don't need to go and join a gym. I can't go to the gym. I've got an autoimmune disease. So what I do, I so I get the cans of refried beans out of the pantry and I just use that, or I do chair yoga, or because that's the exercise that I can do. So when I say exercise, walking, swimming, you know, use the stuff you've got at home. I've got a couple of steps out the back. So I put my headphones on and I do step ups out the back. It's not an expensive, I don't want people to go out and say, right, I've got to go and join the gym, it's going to cost me $1,000 a year. You don't need to. If you want to, that's good. So they're the sort of things that I wanted to put in that book so that people from different economic backgrounds can know that they can do these things and they can make changes and it's not going to cost them a lot of money. And that's right. The big thing.
Right.
You know, I work at a hospital where we have a very, there's an area of low socioeconomic background. And I see a lot of those patients, they can't go to the gym. They can't pay all this money out. So, you know, I say to them, look, do what I do. Use the stuff you've got at home. If you've got two steps into your laundry, do step ups on that. If you've got cans of food in the cupboard, use that to do your bicep curls to get started. You know, so it's little things like that. That's what I wanted to get across to people, that you don't have to spend a lot of money.
So I noticed for the nutrition piece, you focused on the Mediterranean diet. Can you talk a little bit more about why that particular diet, and are there other diets that would be good for heart healthy meals?
Because there's so many diets out there, the Atkins diet, the, you know, low carb, high protein, the fast 800, you know, the Mediterranean diet. If you look at people from places like Greece and the Mediterranean cities, they don't have as higher levels of heart disease as Australia or US or Canada. And it's because of what they eat, the fats, the food. If you eat good food, the Mediterranean diet is mainly vegetables, fruit, fish, and a little bit of meat. In Australia, we eat an exorbitant amount of red meat, which is not necessarily good for you. And I'm not advocating, oh, I'll go vegetarian. I'm not advocating I won't eat meat, because you need to get some of the iron from that meat. Otherwise, you become iron deficient, you become tired, you can't function. So the Mediterranean diet is a well-rounded diet and it has the good fats in it. So the oily fish, tuna, sardines. Sardines I don't eat because I can't stand the smell of them, but salmon. They're all classed as oily fish. So that's good oil that will help keep your cholesterol low. Vegetables are good in fibre, which also fibre will help get rid of some of the cholesterol as well. So the Mediterranean diet is a well-rounded diet and it's a diet that everybody can follow. You don't have to go out and buy anything special. You don't need, there are cookbooks out there that have got Mediterranean diet type foods in it, go and get a cookbook from that. But it's mainly vegetables, fruit, oily fish, a little bit of meat, and using your pulses and grains, so your legumes. And that is a fairly healthy diet. And that's what I've got my husband on. He's lost 7 kilos since August. So you need to exercise as well. They all sort of go hand in hand together. But I found the Mediterranean diet is good for a slow weight loss. Yes, you could do a diet that makes you lose the weight quickly just to get you started. But I didn't want to advocate any particular diet except healthy eating. And the Mediterranean diet, it's not really a diet, it's just a way of living. Right. It's a healthy way of eating, and that's what I follow. Yeah.
Very good. Okay. So if you're working with a woman who is overwhelmed, she's a busy career mom, she works 50, 60 hours a week, she takes care of her family, her kids, and she's maybe burning out from the job. If there was 1 to 3 things that she should focus on for her heart, what would you say they are? What 3 things would you focus on?
Okay. I'd focus on diet, all right, because diet, some foods can make you feel full and boggy, and if you're busy and you're tired, it's just going to weigh you down more. So I'd focus on your diet. The other thing I would focus on is exercise. And I know exercise is difficult, but exercise produces endorphins, which help you relax, make you feel good. So exercise is a big thing. And another thing is making sure you get enough sleep.
I knew you were going to say that one.
And how many women get a good 8 hours sleep a night? No, there wouldn't be many of us. Yeah. You know, so having a restful night, and I mean a restful night's sleep, is another probably big thing, because if you get enough sleep, it's going to help reduce your stress. It's going to help with your mood, and do your diet and exercise. If you drop some weight, it's a bonus. That's going to make you feel good as well. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about weight I wanted to reiterate to people is don't get on the scales all the time. If you're going to do the Mediterranean diet and start eating, you know, more vegetables, once a week, and go by your clothes, if you know what I mean. Your clothes are starting to feel baggy and you're exercising, you're losing weight. My husband says to me, oh, I've gone up 2 belt notches, but the scales aren't going down. I've gone, yeah, but you've gone up 2 belt notches. So what does that tell you? Oh, that I've lost some weight. Yep, you've lost some weight. And because he's exercising, he's building muscle. When you exercise, you build muscle, lose fat. But you won't necessarily suddenly look like Elle Macpherson or Christy Brinkley. Yeah, and I think that's what people go on a diet and they go, look, it's not working. It's not working. And you go, are your clothes looser? Yeah. Well, it is working. But, you know, you're not going to go from the way you are now to a Christy Brinkley in a month. You know, you need to work on it. So those 3 things are probably big ones for women. And when you're working full time and you do your job, you come home, and they all say, what's for dinner? So your job never ends. You might work at your job that you're employed for, but then you come home and you work at your second job. And that's feeding the family, getting the kids organised for school, making lunches, getting them all bath, getting them into bed. By that time, it's 8 o'clock. And you think you get a good 8 hours sleep, but your mind's still ticking over. The one thing I would say to women is that if you feel that you're not sleeping well and you've got insomnia, that's not a good thing. Go and speak to your family physician. And I don't advocate taking drugs to help you sleep. But what I do is I've got a little app on my phone. But before I go to bed, it's like 5 minutes to help me just close my eyes, try and relax, and then see if I can get to sleep that way. So there's lots of apps out there that you can get that you know, you can hear the voice and you think, oh my God, if I listened to this voice all day, I'd sleep all day. You know, but they might help you to relax a bit and get to sleep, because we all go to bed and we're thinking, right, now tomorrow I've got to do this and this and this, So you're not relaxing, you're not restful, because you've got things on your mind, and it is very difficult.
Right. Do you have a favorite sleep app?
No, I've got a few on my phone. I haven't got my phone with me at the moment, but I will email them to you.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes people like hearing them. Yeah. I tell my clients, like, if you're in crisis, like 3 to 4 days without sleep, yeah, maybe temporary, take something. But overall, they stop working. They become ineffective. You know, research has clearly shown that. So it's best to do the sleep training.
Yeah. Yeah. And I must admit, I probably only get 5 to 6 hours sleep a night. If I get 6 hours, that's a good night for me, because of all my joint issues. But I try and keep to a routine. For me, I need a routine. Okay, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, that's when I go to bed. If I go to bed any earlier, I'm still awake at midnight. So I try and do things to try and time myself out. If I've worked a shift in the ER, I have no problems because I'm absolutely exhausted and I will sleep. But on the days when I'm not working in that job, I'll go to bed and I'm laying there and I'm thinking, what am I going to do tomorrow? And I think, no, you've got to stop. You've got to try and relax. And so I try and keep to a routine. I go to bed, I get up. I'm not a person that can lay in bed and get a sleep in. Once I'm awake, that's it. I'm out of bed. My husband can roll over and go back to sleep for another 3 hours. I still don't know how he can do that. But, and he'll put his head on the pillow and he's asleep in 5 minutes. And I get up and I'm looking at him. I'm thinking, how do you go to sleep? You're on the pillow and you're sleep snoring in 5 minutes. And I'm still laying there going, right, now I really need to go to sleep. So a sleep routine. But like you said, if you're 3 or 4 days without sleep, you need to go and see your doctor.
Yeah.
And say, hey, look, this is happening. You know, every 3 or 4 weeks I'm having this problem. What can I do about it? And he will give you a light sedative. Just, you know, there are tablets out there. I don't know about in America, but here in Australia, there are tablets that have a short, what we call a short half-life. Mm-hmm. So you might take the tablet at 11 p.m. It'll get you to sleep. Within 4 hours, the action of the tablet has reduced. So you're not waking up in another 4 hours feeling groggy.
Right.
Because it's almost out of your system. There'll be traces there, but not enough to put you to sleep. So, and your doctor can help people with that sort of medication if they need it.
Yeah.
Because you're right, you can't function. If you can't sleep, you can't function.
Exactly. You know, or at least start the process of figuring out what's going on. Like, are you having symptoms of mania? Are you having sleep apnea? So.
Yes. And that's the other thing. If people do have sleep apnea, and people associate it with heavily overweight people.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. You don't have to be heavily overweight to have sleep apnea.
Right.
Sleep apnea is caused by blockages in your airways, but also if you've got a lot of belly fat, it pushes on your diaphragm, your ability to expand your lungs, which causes sleep apnea, which you will constantly be either stopping breathing or waking up or whatever. And the other thing I wanted to say with sleep is, if any of your listeners have reflux or indigestion, I do advocate putting the head of your bed up. So getting a couple of blocks under the top end of your bed so you're not lying flat. Because if you're having symptoms of reflux, that's going to keep waking you up. You know, they may wake up coughing or feeling like they're choking. It's because the stomach contents, you think of, 4 hours ago, should be out of my stomach by now. Not always, but that can cause restless sleep. And the only place, if you are getting reflux where you're getting fluid coming into the back of your throat, the only place that's going to go is your lungs, which makes you cough and then causes pneumonias and things like that, because there's acid in your stomach, which breaks down your food. So if people suffer from reflux or chronic heartburn or indigestion, and they're on medication for it, just put the head of your bed up with 2 blocks and sleep maybe on 2 pillows if you can. And you'll find that if you reduce your risk of reflux symptoms through the night, you'll get a better night's sleep.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Okay. So one of my other questions is, when women are diagnosed with any kind of cardiac related health problem, are there other diagnoses that tend to go hand in hand that you see frequently?
They don't necessarily, they're not necessarily caused by the heart problem, but type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. which is the diabetes that you may end up on insulin later on, but it's the type of diabetes that's usually diagnosed, it could be diagnosed in 25 up. If you've got a bad diet, if you're overweight and have got risk factors and then you've had a cardiac event, they will test you for diabetes. And they'll probably find in some people they've got type 2 diabetes. So then that's two risk factors that you've got, and right. that's two risk factors that have to be mitigated. So you'll be on, somebody will be on maybe heart medications, but then they'll also be on a medication to lower their blood sugar levels because they've got type 2 diabetes. Now, not all people that have type 2 diabetes end up on medication or insulin.
Right.
Sometimes the doctor will say, right, your blood sugar is a little bit high. You're in pre-diabetes. We need to change your diet and you need to lose some weight. And when people do that, sometimes the diabetes goes and they won't require medication. But if you have a heart problem, you will always be checked, always by your family physician for cholesterol problems and type 2 diabetes. Because those two and heart problems, or they go hand in hand usually.
What about hypertension?
Hypertension, yes. Yeah, so that's another one. So there are a lot of little risk factors that can add up to someone having cardiac problems. And it's risk factors that not people won't know about unless it's tested, like hypertension. So a lot of people walk around Australia that don't realise they've got high blood pressure because they don't go and see a GP or what we call our family physician because they're not sick. And it's not until they turn up to an ER and we take their blood pressure and we go, oh, you got a headache? No, why? Well, your blood pressure is 200. Oh, have you got high blood pressure in your family? Oh, yeah. Okay, then we need to do something about this. So it's the little things that all add up. If a woman's had a heart attack, all of that will be investigated. And then the cardiologist will order all the medications and your family physician will look after you. So to reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes, you have to exercise and eat a good diet.
It all comes back to that, doesn't it?
It does. Everything. And it's funny. You think, oh, can't it be something else?
Right?
But no,
it's same with mental health. It's same with mental health. When people exercise and eat healthy, a lot of mental health symptoms go away too. Not everything.
And that is true. And that is true. I see, I mean, I'm not a mental health nurse, but the patients that I see that might come in with minor injuries and require suturing, while I'm suturing, we have a bit of a chat and they might say, oh, yeah, I've got you know, bipolar or I've got depression. And, you know, I just feel really down. And that is my in. And I go, okay, well, do you exercise or has a doctor spoken to you about your diet? You know, you don't have diabetes, do you? Because a lot of mental health patients, and I can't tell you why, have type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. So they've got a few risk factors there that not only are they're feeling crappy because they're depressed or they just don't know what they're going to do and they're down, but then they've got to deal with everything else on the other side when it crops up. And that can be very overwhelming for people, very overwhelming.
Yeah, and it's hard to make really good choices when you're sad, when you're chronically sad.
And you know what? It is very difficult because when you're down, you just want anything. You know, I have an autoimmune disease called scleroderma, which severely immunosuppresses me. And some days I think, oh God, I really couldn't be bothered. I might just go to the shops and get some snacks. And then after I've eaten the snacks, I think, well, that was a bit stupid because that hasn't made me feel any better.
Right.
You know, so it is the down days that you need to be wary of. So I now advocate that, you know, if you're going to do your shopping, shop with a list and try and not pick up the biscuits and the chips and the cookies and the, and I, that's taken, you know, my husband's heart event to get me around to that, even though I knew it.
Right.
But he'll go, what's for dessert? I go, no dessert for you tonight.
Yeah.
You know, you can have dessert. You can have dessert on the weekend and it's only one night. So you pick the night and I'll make you a dessert, but you're not getting dessert through the week. And this is your portion. Portion size is a big thing as well.
Yes, yes.
So there's a lot to it, but you're right. Mental health, diet and exercise, they all go hand in hand. Yes. And mental health nurses do discuss all that sort of thing with people. But you can say to someone, look, you know, I know you're very stressed at the moment and I know you've got a lot going on in your life, but if we change your diet and your exercise, it will make you feel better. But you can say that to someone, but if they're in a bad place, it's something that you've got to work on, you know, slowly. Don't just ram it home and say, right now, I want you to go home, change your diet. You've got to exercise for 30 minutes a day, because they're not going to do it. You know, you need to say, okay, well, maybe we'll get you in to see a dietitian that might be able to help you, and maybe we'll get the mental health nurse to have a chat to you to work out what is triggering your need to eat what's not good. Is there anything else is there any other supports we can put in to help you with your mental health? Yep. So, you know, it is very hard for patients with mental health issues when they have heart problems as well, because they feel as if everything's against them. And there are things that we can do, but it is it's like the tortoise and the hare. The hare will win, but with people that have had trauma and mental health issues, you have to acknowledge that you can't load them with so much information. You need to be the tortoise. All right, this week what I want you to do is try and eat a few more vegetables. Don't worry about the exercise. We'll deal with that later on. Mm-hmm. And then you get them back the next week. How did we go with the vegetables? Oh, I didn't do too bad. Okay, well, that's good. Keep a food diary. And then when you look back at it over a week, you think, did I really eat that? When I did that, I thought, oh, my God. No, that's going and that's going and that's going. You know, so I say keep a food diary for a week and just be your normal self. And then if you go and see your mental health nurse or the dietitian, go, oh, look, this is what I ate. Don't tell me this is what I ate. And they'll go, right, well, this is what we'll try and do this week. So it's little things, bit by bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I find too, like, if you focus on adding instead of taking away, it helps. So if you add couple of vegetables to your day, then you're gonna be more full, so you're less likely to add the sugary snack. Sometimes the word adding, people do better with.
It's a slow step. It is a slow step, but if people do those slow steps, like you said, you feel fuller, and then after a while you'll forget about the sugary snacks and you won't be going looking, because you know you've had your carrot sticks, or, you know, I say to people, if you want a snack, I buy a tzatziki dip or a low fat dip, and I chop up carrot sticks and cucumber sticks. And I go, if you need to, you can dip them in the dip. But if you just want to eat them by themselves, that's going to fill you up and have a glass of water. And then you're not looking for the biscuits and the cookies and the chips and the everything else.
Right. Okay. So we are close to being out of time. So if you could think just for a minute, Tracy, what would be the most hopeful suggestion or wisdom you could give to trauma survivors who also have a lot of medical issues? What could you say that would be hopeful to them?
Look after yourself first. Look after your mental health and your health conditions first, because if you don't look after yourself, you're not going to be able to look after whoever else is in your life, as in your new partner or your children, or because if you're unwell, they're not going to get the benefit. So especially women, we, like I said at the beginning, we tend to look after everybody else and not worry about ourselves. And it's important that we have to take that time to worry about ourselves, so that we can feel better, and that way the whole family is going to benefit. You know, your children will feel better. Your work colleagues may notice a difference that you're happier, or you're not as snappy, or you're not as sad. So we have to sometimes step back and go, well, you know what? No, I'm going to do this for me today. And that way I know that it's going to make me feel better, so that I can make my family life better for my family. That's probably the big thing, because women don't do that. Yeah. Women don't do that. And I'm sure trauma survivors don't do that either, because they're heightened. They're in that thing. They're protecting their children, or they're protecting where they're living. They don't think that, hey, hang on a minute, I need to protect myself as well. So I need to look after myself. So that's a big thing. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your wisdom today and hanging out with
us. All right.
Okay.
That's fine. You've got the email. So if anybody's got any questions, and I'll email you some other stuff. And
that'd be awesome.
Yeah. So that's good.
All right. Well, thank you again.
No worries.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.